Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a top-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.
This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show on this Saturday. Mark it down. We've got a brand new time slot, 1 to 3 Eastern. And we always, at the top of every program, we love to connect with our audience, always live on Twitter, at eRadio Sports. And we make it so easy. You can download our app, take us anywhere, anytime, 24/7. And we're going to get to work because it is week 3 of the NFL season. We've got a lot of teams that we're going to break it down. And always my sidekick, hanging out with me in studio, is my producer, Sean Mapes. And you can follow him on social media, at Sean A. Mapes. And let's lead off, Sean, with talking about the Cowboys. They're coming off a 3-point win against the Bengals. And last week off air, you said they didn't have a chance. Like, what happened?
Yeah, I severely, along with most of America, I think, severely underrated Cooper Rush as an NFL quarterback because, frankly, never seen anything from him. I think he's from a small school. And so for him to come in on play for America's team against the AFC champions from last year, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, the whole gang, and he did enough to win, I would say. And so, yeah, you have to be super impressed if you're a Cowboys fan.
Well, you know, when you talk about the quarterback for the Cowboys, the backup, that is, in Cooper Rush, he proved he can handle the bright lights and the stage isn't too big. And I just have to wonder, yes, he is a young quarterback. He's a fifth-year pro. It's not easy being the guy, you know, waiting for that opportunity. But do you think he can eventually develop into a starter with maybe not the Cowboys, but with another NFL team?
Yeah, I think he could be in that class of quarterback where they kind of are either the starter when a team drafts a young guy, or he can be kind of the backup, but it's a pretty equal, like a Geno Smith type where he's in the league for years. He starts for several different teams like Geno Smith has, but he's not the, like, put his face on the billboard guy. I think that would be like that would be Kurt Warner kind of story.
Yeah.
for Cooper Rush. I'm not quite ready to put that on him yet. He played well against the Bengals, but we'll see.
Okay, give us a quick hit. Monday Night Football. The Cowboys are on the road at the Giants. A renewed rivalry, right? Yeah. That never goes away. What do you expect?
I think the Giants are a little bit overrated because their two wins are two close wins against the Titans and the Panthers. Neither really impress you that much. And with Cooper, what I saw from Cooper Rush, maybe I'm just buying the hype. Now I'm in on Cooper Rush. I like the Cowboys.
Okay, our NFL news and notes will continue in Hour 1 at Sports Map Radio Network. You're listening to the Big E Sports Show.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We are going to completely shift gears, and we're going to go around the horn and shine the spotlight on the Houston Astros as they clinch the AL West and a first-round bye to the ALDS. Today, they are on the road. Tonight, they're getting ready for their series against the Orioles. And we are so excited to have back with us longtime Astros beat writer. I believe it's his 19th season. And that is Brian McTaggart. Hello, Brian. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a while since you've been on the program. 19, is that correct? 19 years covering the Astros. I mean, what's your secret sauce? I mean, that's some serious longevity. Come on, Brian.
Well, just I must be fooling them or something. I don't know. But yeah, 19 years, you know, seen a little bit of everything. I've seen them lose 100 games 3 years in a row, and then seen them win 100 games 3 years in a row, and do again this year for the fourth time in the last 6 years. So it's been a pretty remarkable run.
Well, indeed it has. It has been a remarkable run for the Astros. And I just have to wonder, You know, what were your expectations coming into the 2022 season? I mean, did you project that they would win the AL West again and challenge for yet another world championship? They're getting themselves into position each and every year, it seems like. That's a good trend.
Yeah, I mean, coming off last year, they went to the World Series, lost to the Braves in six. I thought this year they were by far the best team in the AL West. I thought they would win it, but I didn't think they would win it by as big a margin as they did. You know, they could end up winning this division by 20 games. They clinched it on Monday. So they've just been head and shoulders, you know, the best team in the American League now for a couple of months. And, you know, it certainly looked like early in the year the Yankees were going to have the best record in the AL. And then, you know, the Astros played the Yankees in June on a bunch of games in a row and dominated them and sort of took control of the league. And, you know, here they are now with the closing down the best record in the American League in the first round bye. So when you consider all the players they've lost the last few years, you know, like Gerrit Cole and Springer and then Correa off last year's team, to keep on winning like this is pretty remarkable.
Indeed. Astros beat writer. Check him out, astros.com. Also give him a follow on Twitter, at Brian McTaggart. We always enjoy when he's on the program giving us the pulse, the skinny on the Astros. Five straight appearances in the ALCS, winning three of them. Expectations high. Is this a championship or bust season for the Stros? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they lost the World Series last year, so I think getting to the World Series is not going to be good enough. They want to win it. I mean, they have several players on this team who have played in three World Series, and a few of them quite a few more have played in a couple of these World Series. You know, they've lost the last couple they've been in. So, you know, ever since the sign-stealing scandal broke early in 2020, they haven't – I think they kind of want to win one post-sign-stealing scandal to show people, you know what, we are a really good team no matter what went on. And here we are 5 years later winning another World Series after we won the one in 17. But – I think definitely if they go to the World Series and lose, they're not going to be happy about it, no matter who they lose to or how they lose. They think this is a team that can get it done, that can win the World Series, and they're playing as well right now as they played all year. So they got a really good shot to do it.
Yeah, the composition of this roster, I mean, it looks like they're built to win, and revenge is always a great motivator. So give us the forecast. I mean, here we are. I can't believe, Brian, we're already wrapping up the month of September, but how well can this team play in October? What say you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they're poised to do really well. I mean, number one, they have great pitching. They have the best pitching staff in the American League, and that's starters and relievers. Right now, they go six starters deep with a couple of all-stars at the top with Verlander and Valdez. Lance McCullers has come back and done very well. And guys like Christian Javier and Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy, guys that people don't know about, have all put together a really quality season. So they're going to have very, very strong pitching and rested pitching in the playoffs. They're going to have a bye into the ALDS, so they're going to play one of the AL wild card winners. They're going to have home field advantage. You know, if they get to the ALCS and play the Yankees, they're going to have home field advantage over the Yankees, which would be huge. So I think going into the playoffs, they will be the favorites to win the American League, no matter, you know, what people think of the Yankees at this point. I mean, the Astros beat the Yankees 5 out of 7 games in the regular season and probably should have won the two that they lost. They lost on walk-off losses at Yankee Stadium. So they're the team to beat, and they're as healthy as they've been all year, and they're playing with a lot of swagger right now, and they certainly have a lot of determination and a chip on their shoulder to get back to the win a World Series after winning that one in 2017.
You're listening to the familiar voice, Brian McTaggart. Check out all of his work at astros.com. He is their beat reporter, and at Brian McTaggart. You know, you just were talking and mentioning, as far as the Astros pitching, how it just continues to dominate. Talk to us about Justin Verlander, and how would you describe his production and play from this past season? And maybe some highlights. What's a personal highlight?
Well, the most amazing thing about Verlander is that he basically was out two full seasons because he ended up having Tommy John surgery. He made one start in 2020, missed all of last year. And to come back and put himself in position to win the Cy Young at age 39 years old is really remarkable. You know, he's carried a couple of no-hitters into the eighth inning. He already has a couple of those, or three of those, I think. Yeah, trying to almost got a fourth a couple of different times. But he's just been absolutely dominant. And, he sort of changes the way he pitches now. He doesn't have to throw 98, 99 anymore, although a couple of times he's reached back and done that as well. But just the fact that no one knew what to expect coming off 2 years where he was injured. And then to come out and just pitch so well from the get-go, and now he's probably going to win his third Cy Young is just absolutely remarkable.
I'm just curious, you know, when we look at postseason, kind of look ahead, I mean, how do you think the rotations, how do you think that's going to look?
Yeah, well, they have, they're kind of in a luxurious situation because
they got depth.
You know, I think, yeah, I mean, they're going to have Verlander and Valdez, 1-2, a couple mm-hmm. all-stars. I mean, Valdez has thrown 25 consecutive quality starts. So and that's a major league record. So they're going to have two very, very solid guys on that rotation. And then, you know, McCullers could go in a third game. And then after that, you know, pick your poison. I mean, they could throw Urquidy or Christian Javier, who's unhittable at times, Luis Garcia. They can come at you so many different ways. And then they have, one of the best bullpens in baseball as well, and so many weapons and guys who close games out. And they have a top prospect named Hunter Brown, who's a starter that they're probably going to put in their bullpen as well, who can throw 99 miles an hour. So no matter how they slice it, their rotation is going to be set up for them to win and go very deep until October.
2022, it has been another incredible run for the Houston Astros. You were talking about what's amazing is just how they continue to have this sustained success. They keep dominating the division, especially after losing key players like, you know, George Springer, Carlos Correa. What about the development of players? That's got to be a big key.
Yeah, and, you know, all three of those guys, or both those guys you mentioned, Springer, Correa, and then Gerrit Cole after the 19 season, you know, all yeah. ended up getting huge contracts elsewhere. And the Astros sort of have a philosophy that, you know, we'd rather not give one player all that money for all those years. We'll spread it around. We trust our player development. I mean, if you look at their starting rotation of the six starters they have right now, five of them are homegrown that they developed, signed, and developed themselves. And four of those were international signings that, you know, guys who were signed a little bit later than, you know, your normal international signing. I'm talking about Valdez, Garcia, Urquidy, and Javier. And, you know, none of those guys were really high on prospect lists at any point. But
interesting.
The Astros did a really nice job developing them, getting them to the big leagues. And even after they got to the big leagues and struggled working with them, like Framber Valdez had a couple of years where he couldn't throw strikes. And, you know, now he's one of the best pitchers in the game. And even, having guys like Chaz McCormick in center field, Jeremy Pena, a shortstop who was taken a little bit later in the draft. They've drafted pretty well, too. So they have a secret sauce over there, and they still spend money when they have to. They've made some pretty good trades, too, to fill spots. But they're not afraid to spend money, but they're just not going to throw money around. And they're going to trust their drafting and developing, and it's a formula that's worked out really well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, in order to have success at the major league level, it's about developing talent in the minor leagues. We're going to close out our interview. Give us the keys for tonight's matchup against the Orioles.
Well, you know, it's the Astros got to keep doing what they've, you know, been doing all year, and that's getting really solid starting pitching. You know, they're doing just enough offensively. This is not a great offense like they had in 2019 when they went to the World Series and posted 107 wins. But right now they have a lot of their key players who are hitting really well. Tucker, Alvarez, Bregman have all heated up here towards the end of the season. But like every other Astros game, they're going to rely on their starter to go six or seven innings and shut down the bullpen and then do just enough to win. And, you know, they've played pretty well in Baltimore over the years, too.
It has been an incredible run for the Houston Astros, and we will continue to watch. Of course, check them out, Astros Beat Writer, astros.com. Some great articles on there, and give them a follow on Twitter, at Brian McTaggart. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, thanks for having me.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network.
Wake up call!
I think these records are cool in baseball. It doesn't sit well with other sports in terms of the numbers. There's a few that people are into, but, you know, sometimes you go to an arena and you kind of have to be reminded that somebody's getting the all-time assist record. Baseball does its numbers better than any sport. You just know them. It's part of the culture of baseball. It's part of the sport of baseball. And even though, again, ballparks are different, the strategy is different, the pitchers are and training is different, whatever it may be, it's still a sport that says, yes, you can take a player from 1922 and you can compare them to 2002, and you compare that player to 2022, and you compare that player to 1952. Like, there's all these different ways that the sport can be compared. Even though circumstances are completely different, it's still a sport that says, but you can do it, and everybody's okay with that.
Wake up call with Tony D and Ron Culver. Weekday mornings from 7 to 11 Eastern. The Rundown with Jeff Michael.
The Cowboys do have major, major problems, and it starts with their offensive line. I have zero trust in the Cowboys right now because all eyes are on Dak Prescott's arm and Zeke Elliott's legs. That's not going to do it, folks. I'm sorry. Dak Prescott is not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady. He's on... I even put Dak at tier 3. I don't even put him on tier 2. I think Dak is a tier 3 quarterback.
The Rundown. Weekdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. Just Saying It with Cole Thompson.
I remember saying at the very start of the offseason, this is Buffalo's year. It's not just about what they did in the offseason. It's about how close they were last year to making sure it was their year. And I do believe that if they would have found a way to hang on and beat Kansas City, they would have steamrolled the likes of Cincinnati, and they would have absolutely crushed Sean McVay and that Los Angeles Rams team in the postseason. Tell me where this team has a flaw. They are the clear-cut best team in the NFL. And they're not only the best team in the NFL, they're arguably one of the best teams we've seen in recent memory because that they work offensively, they get out quickly defensively, and they find ways to be successful. It is a very early part of the season, but put your money down. Because Buffalo is the clear-cut favorite to win the Lombardi Trophy in 2022.
Just Saying It. Weekdays from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Are you looking for your next favorite content to binge? Look no further. Search for your team at www.believe.com, where you can find sports analysis from former pro athletes, scripted comedy shows, binge-worthy pop culture, health, and much more. That's BLEAV, the number one content network for professionals. Do you believe?
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next segment, we love to hear from you. Connect with us many different ways. We make it so easy, always on Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can go back and listen to any of our interviews at podcastarena.com. Email the show, info@eradiosports.com. And you can download our app and keep you up to date on the latest sports news and scores, and all your favorite shows are at Sports Map Radio Network. It is week 4 of the college football season, and we're ready to shine the spotlight on the second-ranked team in the country, and that is the Alabama Crimson Tide. It is a countdown to kickoff, 6:30 Central Time, as the Crimson Tide will host Vanderbilt, and we are so excited to have with us for the very first time from The Athletic, he's the Alabama beat writer, and that is Aaron Settles. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All righty, Aaron, let's break it all down before we preview the big matchup. Here we are in week 4. Give us your immediate takeaways. What have we learned about the Crimson Tide so far?
I think the biggest takeaway I have is I still have more questions on this. I know it may sound bizarre for a team that's ranked number 2 in the country, but I think a lot of us had big expectations for this team, given the fact that Bryce Young was returning, given the fact that Will Anderson on defense was returning, and a lot of us were shocked that they nearly got beat week 2 against Texas. So I still don't know the identity of this offense. I don't know if they're trying to be spread up and down the field what they've been in the past with Bryce Young, or if they're trying to be a power running team. And I think they're trying to right now be a little both, and I don't know that they're accomplishing that. I still have questions about what this identity is. But on the other side of the ball, they've been really good on defense.
Questions about the identity, but what do you think that the Crimson Tide learned from that game against Texas? I mean, they narrowly escaped an upset.
I think their competitive character. They learned what it was like to be tested on the road in a hostile environment. And I think we learned again, and they learned, if they didn't already know, that Bryce Young is a very cool customer. We saw it last year in the Iron Bowl. He delivered a last minute drive when they needed it. He did it again on the road. That's two hostile environments that he's gone in and done that when his team absolutely had to have it. So I think when the chips are down, I think people in that locker room know that they can lean on Bryce Young.
You know, when we talk about and shine the spotlight on Alabama's quarterback and Bryce Young, you know, what was his focus in the summer leading into this season? What were some of the things that he needed to clean up?
Well, I think one is pocket awareness. I think sometimes he has a tendency because of his belief in his ability, which is not a bad thing. But I think there are certain times when you've been dominant at every level that you've been, you have this unshakable belief in yourself, which is why Bryce is the competitor he is. But you also have to realize that the guys on the other side of the field are pretty good too. And there's only so much at this level that you can hang in the pocket. Sometimes you just have to throw that ball away and lift to play another down. I think that, and I think too, which he's still sort of figuring out, is that this wide receiving core is not what it's been in the past. There's no Devontae Smith. There's no John Metchie or Jameson Williams that he can. So I think in that regard, what he worked in the summer was trying to get some chemistry with those guys. But it's been pretty clear through 3 weeks as we get ready here on Saturday for their fourth game against Vanderbilt that the wide receiver play is certainly not what it's been in the past.
Countdown to kickoff as we get you ready for the Alabama Crimson Tide as they host the Vanderbilt Commodores 6:30 Central Time kickoff. And we are going one-on-one from The Athletic. That is Aaron Suttles. And you can give him a follow on Twitter at Aaron Suttles. And we're going to highlight his new book here momentarily. But, you know, listening to head coach Nick Saban's press conference is always compelling to watch. He talked a little bit about as far as the difference in practice. What are some of the things that they're doing in their preparation to be in sync and to play better, especially for tonight?
Yeah, I think a couple areas they can definitely improve. And as I mentioned, I think it's consistency from the wide receiver play. I think they're still trying to figure out their five best offensive linemen. We've seen a lot of different combinations. Last week, we saw Tyler Booker get into the game at left guard. I think that's probably where they're going to go from here on out as things get a lot tougher starting next week. When we get into October, that Alabama schedule gets very difficult with the game at Arkansas. You have the much-anticipated Texas A&M game, and then on the back end of that sandwich, you get at Tennessee. So those are hostile environments to play. And so I think to get that five offensive linemen worked out in practice is something that really has to be key on what they're trying to do in the week. And I think a couple other things where they can improve, even though they've been really good on defense, I think they've only got one turnover on the year through three games, so they have to get better at turning teams over. They've got the talent to do so. And they've got to get to the quarterback. They've got two elite rushers on the end in Will Anderson and Dallas Turner. They have to start getting to the quarterback, affecting the quarterback, as Nick Saban calls it. So from the defensive end, it's turning people over and getting pressure on the quarterback.
And another point of emphasis is obviously minimizing penalties. I mean, I go back to that Texas game. You guys had 15. I mean, that's the most ever, what, under Nick Saban?
Yeah, it was a comedy of errors. You know, there were a couple drives where it was almost like they couldn't get out of the way. It was Keystone Cops. In a certain way. So I think cleaning that up, and a lot of that is just composure. It's just your emotional maturity. It's hot. The game's not going like you expected. The other team's playing better than you expected. The crowd's coming down on you, and you just have to handle those emotions. I think you can sometimes live. I mean, you don't love it, but you can live with effort penalties when you're trying to make a tackle and you grab a face mask or, you know. But some of those penalties are just your ability to be disciplined in the moment, lining up in the neutral zone, jumping off sides, things like that. It's just your discipline. I think that's what drove Nick Saban crazy, and they've certainly been working on that since.
Okay, so Vanderbilt is a worthy opponent, much improved, and they are finding ways to win. Aaron, what's your level of concern?
I think Vanderbilt's a well-coached team, and what Clark has done there is to be admired. It's obviously the toughest job in the SEC, given their recruiting standards, the academic standards, to be able to recruit to that institution. So he had a big rebuilding job to do. I think he's done a good job of changing the culture. That said, there's only so far that it's going to get you when you don't have the players, when you don't have the level of athlete that Alabama's going to have. So, you know, unless Alabama completely melts down, we see another 15 penalties, we see multiple turnovers, we see special teams touchdowns. I'm not that concerned. I'm more concerned watching this game. Can Alabama be the team we thought it could be? It's like Nick Saban said, it's oversimplification, but you're almost not playing. You're playing against a nameless opponent. So you got to go out there and play your best. And we just haven't seen a real crisp, clean game from Alabama. Although last week, 60-37, you can't complain that much, but you just got to rise to a level of team that this team is capable of being.
Aaron Suttles, he is the Alabama beat writer for The Athletic. Give him a follow on Twitter at Aaron Suttles. And also, he is an author. And you got a new book that's going to be released here in October. I believe it is the 11th. And what are our listeners going to find when they open up? And tell us about the book.
Yeah, I think if you're an Alabama fan or people appreciate history, you'll find this an interesting read because it's different vignettes about Alabama and that football program, particularly under Nick Saban, some of the things that they've accomplished, the players that they've had come through the program, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Julio Jones, now Will Anderson, Derek Thomas, different stories on those players. You're going to find the coaches that have come through. It's been long touted that Nick Saban produces a lot of branches off that tree. We've seen what Kirby Smart has started to do. Won the national championship last year. Looks like he's got the best team in college football again this year. He's built a monster there in Athens. Owes a lot of his career to Nick Saban. Lane Kiffin now at Ole Miss. So you'll find assistant coach stories. You'll find Nick Saban, Coach Paul Bear Bryant, individual player story, how Nick Saban has recruited at Alabama and how that's changed throughout the year, a number of national championships Alabama's had and how that's debated from program to program. I know that's a point of contention sometimes. People say Alabama claimed too many. How did they arrive at that number? So if you just want to sit down, it's an easy read because you can take it chapter by chapter rather than telling a narrative story from beginning to end. And I think you can pick up the book at any time and pick up right where you left off and read a different story, which I know a lot of people in this day and age where time is so crunched for them is helpful.
Okay, so director, listeners, where can they go and get a copy of the book?
You can find it at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com. We appreciate any feedback and reviewing the book and liking it. I certainly appreciate that, but I appreciate you having me to help promote it. It was a labor of love. I got COVID at the very end of the process.
Oh.
Finishing a book on deadline with COVID
yeah.
in a hotel room. But, you know, never written a book before, learned a lot about it. And I think those who appreciate college football and greatness will enjoy this tale.
Hey, listen, Aaron, we only got about a minute. Of course, the title of the book is The Program, Alabama. What is the common denominator when you look at just how Alabama rose to the pinnacle of college sports? How did they arrive and just this sustained success?
I think it's the passion for college football. That's what it comes down to. That's why you have the two greatest coaches in the history of college football coaching at one institution, Coach Bryant and Coach Saban, because those guys had a vision. Obviously, it's their success, but the culture around Alabama supports it. It means a lot to the people in Alabama. They support it. They show up on Saturdays. They give their money. That's the common denominator that ties you through the 60s and 70s and now through the 2000s with Nick Saban. Is it means a lot to the people in Alabama.
Good stuff. Go ahead and get a copy of Aaron Suttle's brand new book. He's the Alabama beat writer for The Athletic. You can check out his work online. And, of course, the title of the book is The Program, Alabama. And we are set and ready as the Alabama Crimson Tide will host Vanderbilt 6:30 Central Time kickoff. True pleasure having you on the program, and we look forward to another conversation. Enjoy the game today. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday as we continue to get you ready for week 3 in the NFL and all of tomorrow's matchups in our news and notes. But right now, we're going to focus our attention on the Bears as they're going to host the Texans on Sunday. And in our next segment, we're also going to take time to discuss the new steps to enhance diversity in the NFL. The NFL earlier this year adopted a new procedure in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we're going to highlight some of the changes and opportunities, not only for minorities, but for women across the league. And we are so honored to have joining us for the very first time, that is Javier Loya. He has an incredible resume, very successful entrepreneur, businessman, in addition to being a minority owner with his Houston Texans and a member of the NFL Workplace Diversity Committee. Good afternoon, Javier. It's good to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, we've got a lot of ground to cover, but first, order of business is let's zero in on your Texans. The Chicago Bears, they will host the Texans tomorrow, and they are looking to pick up their first win of the season. Just kind of give us the pulse. I mean, what are some of your early season takeaways? What have you learned?
Well, I mean, it's still early in the season, right? So for us, I mean, obviously with Davis Mills, our quarterback, and a lot of new players, it's still kind of just getting the offense down, understanding your teammates and your roles, and performing. So I think, you know, we've shown flashes. I mean, we started out the first game, first three quarters, if you will, against the Colts, playing really outstanding football on both sides. And then we had a tough game in Denver, which is always a tough place to play, but that also went down to the late fourth quarter. So I think, you know, we've got a very competitive team. Chicago is also kind of a rebuild as well. So I think it's going to be a really competitive game. It's going to be really interesting. And having Lovie Smith, a bit of a homecoming to Chicago, I think will add a little more fuel to the fire for our players. But I'm really excited about the game tomorrow.
It certainly will add a little bit more flavor to the game tomorrow and the matchup. You were listening to The Voice. He is the minority owner of the Houston Texans, a member of the NFL Workplace Diversity Committee. We're going to talk about that here in just a moment. And that is Javier Loya. And, you know, our home base, it is Houston. And there is a lot to love about this team. You just mentioned, you can hear it in your voice. I mean, you're excited about the leadership in their head coach, Lovie Smith. It's been fascinating to watch. Of course, you alluded to, you know, that he served as the Bears head coach for 9 seasons, led them to the 2006 NFC Championship and a Super Bowl appearance. And I have to wonder, Javier, you know, going back to Chicago for him, it's always going to bring back a lot of memories and the nostalgia. But what about the familiarity factor? I mean, does that give your Texans a competitive edge in tomorrow's game?
I think so. I mean, I think he's going to know what hotel to stay, and he's going to know, you know, he maybe have not spent a lot of time in the visiting locker room. But he's, you know, it helps. I mean, familiarity and experience, all those things are an added advantage. But at the end of the day, it's still about performing. And I think, you know, Lovie's got his team aggressive. You know, he's still our defensive coordinator calling the plays on the defensive side. We've shown flashes on the offense. So I think, you know, Lovie's going to bring that tough, you know, hard-nosed football that Midwesterners and Chicagoans are familiar with.
Kickoff for Sunday's game against the Bears is set for noon Central Time on CBS. And I want to hear some more about your head coach in Lovie Smith. In fact, it's his first year with the Texans. He is, and correct me if I'm wrong, he is one of 4 minority head coaches in the league. Here in just a second, we're going to discuss the NFL's workplace diversity and their purposeful approach to see true improvement with hiring. But share a little bit about as far as Lovie Smith. I mean, personally, with me being in this business, I've heard so many wonderful things about him as a coach, and his players, they really rally around him. He galvanizes them, and they love him.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, not to use the term that gets overused sometimes, the player's coach, but he really is, because he relates to players. They understand him. And for us, I mean, being from Texas, I mean, he's from here. He coached here. He's one of us. So I think, and then familiarity with the Texans, he was a defensive coordinator with us for 2 years. So
yeah.
He understands our system, understands our leadership, our ownership, what we're trying to do. And so it was just really refreshing, and it was a long, methodical process for us to find our coach. But lo and behold, he was in the building. It made it a lot easier, and he's really surrounded himself with really talented people. And so we're excited for him. We're excited for the city's excited, and it's just, you know, any time when, you know, when you think football, you think Texas, you think Houston, and so it's good. It's good for the city, and I think it's good for the rest of the nation.
Javier Loya, minority owner with Houston Texans, joining us this morning on Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Mark it down, our new time slot, 1 to 3 Eastern Time, and we'd love for you to chime in. We have many different social media platforms. I'm always scrolling on Twitter at E Radio Sports, and perhaps if you've missed any of our interviews in our 2-hour time slot, we make it so easy. Just go to Podcast Arena. .com, and you can download our app and take us anywhere, anytime. Before we move ahead with Javier and talk about the diversity in the NFL, share a little bit more as far as your quarterback, Davis Mills. We want to learn more about him. What do we need to know?
Well, I mean, gosh, where do we start? I mean, he was the highest recruited high school senior his year, the same year that Trevor Lawrence was coming out. And so, you know, comes, you know, obviously he's been playing high level at every level of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Stanford, only played 11 games at Stanford, both of injuries and also because of COVID. So there's just not a lot of experience, not a lot of film on Davis Mills, but he's really shown flashes that he could be that guy. And I think we saw it last year. I think amongst rookies, he was second to the New England quarterback. And certainly the last 6-7 games of his starts, he really performed. So I think, you know, he's on the upswing, but again, he's a young quarterback. A lot of young quarterbacks, you're going to have some up and downs. We've got to get him a better supporting cast. I think we've got some performers there on our offensive side. So I think it's just give him a little bit of time, and he could be you know, a regular name that you hear on Sundays.
Just curious, I mean, what kind of things are they doing to help him get more comfortable? You talk about him being a young quarterback, but to accelerate that process. So he's going to be ready tomorrow, you know, playing Chicago on the road, and that's not going to be easy. That place will be lit up.
Oh no, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
But that's what these players are made for. I mean, that's the kind of things that they look forward to. But I think as far as helping him, I mean, I think one of the best things that Lovey did was to recruit and really elevate Pep Hamilton to offensive coordinator. So Pep has been an offensive guru, if you will, amongst the league for many years. And had been a quarterback coach and offensive consultant for many years, but this is his first step up to offensive coordinator. So I think you're gonna, you know, with Pep working with him, first as a quarterback coach last year, then this year as an offensive coordinator, I think you're gonna continue to see Davis's development, as well as Pep's for that matter. I mean, he's
yeah.
You know, as we talk about diversity, Pep is one of the prospects, I think, for a lot of head coaches. As teams start thinking about making changes both, you know, later in the year.
Javier Loya, minority owner with Houston Texans, joining us this afternoon on Sports Map Radio Network. And, of course, looking forward to the big matchup with the Bears and the Texans. And, oh, by the way, Chicago is coming off a frustrating loss last week to the Packers. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out tomorrow. But right now, let's pivot. Let's shift our focus, Javier, and have a deep discussion about the NFL's workplace diversity. And you're on the board. You're on this committee. Tell us about it. What's the goal? What's the mission?
Well, gosh, I've been on this committee since inception, since senior Mr. Rooney, which I guess founded the name, the Rooney Rule.
Oh yeah.
Which, if you recall, is a mandatory interview of a minority candidate to help you know, grow the prospective pool for head coaches, and then that moved over to both general manager positions and then also to offensive defensive coordinators. So I've been with there, and it was the late Pat Bowlen also was the two chairs of that initial committee, that we just felt that we need to get the top leadership in the NFL to make meaningful change, you know, so that our front offices and our coaching started to represent both our employees, our players. And so it's been a long process, but with 32 teams, sometimes it's hard to get the full data pool. We're not satisfied. Certainly we're not happy with the results, because at the end of the day, you know, we're kind of judged by how many head coaches we have. We have four that you described earlier, but we've had a lot of success. I mean, we've got the most defensive coordinators of minority ethnicity that we've ever had. We've got a lot of talented minority coaches just coming up through the ranks in player positions and pro personnel. And then we've also made meaningful changes on the administrative side, on non-football. So we've got, you know, if you go, especially, you know, I can speak to our team, if you go to ticketing, if you go to HR, if you go to legal, I mean, we've either got a female making those decisions or a minority, in some cases a minority female. And so I think we're on the right path. I mean, this is not anything new to what you would say corporate America, but I think as the NFL has shown, we've been leaders in America and in American business. And I think so for us, we've had to make meaningful changes and institute some rules that say, hey, you have to do it this way. And both penalties and incentives for doing good business.
It sounds like, I mean, Javier, you've been a part of this committee, serving on it for quite some time, and it sounds like it is trending in the right direction. But when we look at the numbers, I mean, there just has been such a lack of diversity in the head coaching ranks in the NFL. Why is that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but at the end of the day, there's only 7 or 8 jobs that come up every year. And so the argument used to be that there weren't enough prepared candidates, and there's need to be more offensive coordinators. At one point, it was defensive coordinators, and that was the trend. And now it's like, hey, it's an offensive system. The rules have changed, so now there's not enough, you know, guru quarterback coaches or head coaches. But no, there's plenty of talented coaches out there of minority descent. So I believe that part of it is as we've looked at this and studied it, there's only 6 or 7 jobs that come up. So, and it's a very competitive process. And so the coaching business is a very fraternal business. There's not a union. And so, you know, the old saying is, you know, a coach is just, you know, is soon to be fired and soon to be out of work. So it's just a tough profession. So they've got relationships And when someone gets hired, and whether that's a general manager or a head coach, he reaches out to relationships and people he knows and trusts. And if that's a non-minority candidate, then that is some of the challenges that we have. Now, what we're trying to do to address some of those things is to create more opportunities and fellowships for minority candidates to meet some of the decision makers, to meet owners, to meet general managers, so that someone's prospective pool gets a little bit larger, a little bit more diverse. And so, even though it's 6 or 7 jobs, we want to make sure that hey, we're making sure if you're a minority candidate, that you're going to put your best foot forward, and you're going to be included at least in that process to be identified and be recruited and be hired. So I we're making those progress, but it's also tough because, you know, even though, you know, I've been at it for 17, 18 years on this committee, you know, if you look at the whole pool, the data sampling is still relatively small, meaning that we're only judging ourselves on the head coaching positions that come up every year. And so that is challenging. However, again, sometimes we do a poor job of telling the good side of the story, which is, hey, we've got lots of offensive coordinators now, lots of defensive coordinators. We've got a lot of position coaches coming on, and we've got a lot of changes in general managers. And so all those things, as those things change, I mean, you know, I liken this to when the discussion was there are no African-American quarterbacks. Well, that's not even a discussion these days. That's not even a topic. Nobody thinks about, oh, okay, how come there's not an African-American quarterback? And so I liken what is happening now on the head coaching front is that, you know, in a few years, this is not going to be a topic. And unfortunately, Lisa, you won't invite me to the show anymore. But that's our goal.
Our NFL news and notes continues with minority owner from the Houston Texans, Javier Loya, after this quick timeout.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. It is week 3 of the NFL season, and we have an exclusive interview one-on-one with the minority owner of the Houston Texans, Javier Loya. Javier, you know, just doing my research, I mean, you truly are a story of inspiration. And I'd love for you to share with our listeners, our audience, a little bit about as far as your journey, your background. You played linebacker for Columbia University in the early 90s. So, just think about what the sport of football has done for you personally and professionally. I mean, like part owner of the Houston Texans, that's an incredible ride.
No, I mean, it's been a dream come true and only in America. I mean, I'm a first generation Mexican-American. You know, my parents, like many immigrants before them, came to this country for opportunities. And so for us, you know, growing up in El Paso and being part of Texas and Friday Night Lights, so all my brothers and played football. My sisters were cheerleaders, and so that was in my blood. And so that's what I wanted to do. And fortunately, my parents, you know, stressed education is a means for us to have success. And so I worked as hard as I could, and I certainly wanted to play for the Longhorns or the Aggies, and I wasn't good enough though. But fortunate for me, my school, Columbia University, was mired in a losing streak, and so they got a little aggressive about searching for student athletes, and they found me, and so I had an opportunity to go play Ivy League football for Columbia, and just had a wonderful experience. And football has kind of stayed in my blood, and after I graduated, worked a little bit, and moved down to Houston. And when I was, you know, had a lot of success here in Houston. It's just a very welcoming city and state. And so, with that, I had an opportunity to buy into Texans when Bob McNair announced his new franchise and said he wanted ownership that was representative of the community. And so, I mean, our diversity push and what we're doing in Houston. I mean, so I know you've got a national program, but I'll take a little bit of time to brag about our city and our team, because real change, as you know, comes from the top. It comes from it's got to come from ownership. It's got to come from the CEO. It's got to come from the very top. You can put lipstick on something and you can pretend and say all the right things, but unless you believe it, then it's not going to have real change. But Bob, when he founded the late Bobby Mayer, when he founded the Houston Texans, I mean, he wanted this to be really representative of the city. He felt he was a steward of this franchise, and he wanted people to say, hey, when I go to a football game, I want people to see that that look and sound like me, right, and talk like me are also part of ownership. So I think that's been done. And even though we haven't had the success in the field that we want or will have at some point, we've been a very successful franchise. And I think a big part of it is the architect, Bobby Nair, and making it a very welcoming team because it's representative of our community.
We are up against the clock. Minority owner of the Houston Texans, member of the NFL Workplace Diversity Committee, a true success story. Javier Loya, you know, you're talking about your collegiate career, like looking at, you know, Texas or the Aggies. Come on, I'm a Sooner. You didn't consider Oklahoma? Come on, Javier.
Sooner boomer, no.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, we would love to have you back. And I've got the...
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,